Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to Gail from the Wackies in Adelaide. Mix and I bring you our second part of Waymarking, and we preview a couple of geocaching events to keep you warm in those winter months. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to GeoTalk episode number 15. I hope if you're particularly on the east coast of Australia, you're rugged up, or even on the south coast, it is frightfully cold at the moment, which means it's a good excuse to get out there and warm up while you're hiking around looking for a couple of geocaches. And of course, you know, you don't have to worry about snakes at the moment, but keep your eye out, particularly in the Sydney region, for any spiders that have been flooded out. And talking about floods, how much rain has there been in the Hunter Valley and Sydney Basin region? Hundreds of millimetres of rain have been falling in areas that haven't seen that for weeks. And word has it, the biggest geocache ever has landed at Nobby's Beach. Now, if you haven't seen it, I'll give you a link in the show notes. But the geocache, I believe, is called the Pasha Bolka. And it's huge. It's big enough to have a whole truckload of geocoins and then some. So check that one out. Anyway, while some of us might have been staying inside because it was just too cold and too wet, others have been getting out and about and getting together in geocaching events. And there were two big ones over the past few weeks, both on the long weekend, the Queen's Birthday long weekend, one down at Mount Gambier in South Australia, where approximately 100 people turned up, and then almost a similar number turned up to Dubbo for the Mission Impossible weekend. Word is both of them were a fantastic event, and listen out for next episode because that episode we're going to feature the Mission Impossible event from Dubbo thanks to some audio that was captured by Mix. And talking about events, later on in the show we're going to preview two events. One of them actually called in through the GeoTalk hotline. Well, actually two did, but one of them, the message kind of got a bit mangled, so I apologize for that. I'll read it out myself. But don't forget, if you've got an event coming up around the country or in New Zealand, give us a call on the GeoTalk hotline, and the number again is 02-800-50-436. That's 800-50-GEO. Now, before we get into the rest of the show, I have to tell you a bit about an experience that I had on the Queen's Birthday weekend when I went looking for a geocache. And this is kind of a bit of an embarrassing story as to what happened. The cache I was looking for was called Two Ways. Now, those in the Sydney region will know this one. There are two ways in which to find this geocache. You can either visit the six points that were mentioned in the description, and at one of those points is a secret password, and the password will help you unlock a zipped file that's password protected. And of course, being lazy, I thought I'll try the second method, which is to triangulate and use the six points, and where they cross over is where the geocache is hidden. So I did that on the computer and I thought, fair enough, I've got a location that looks fairly good, I'm going to go to that spot. And as it turned out, there was another cache that I hadn't found nearby. So I made it to the location, parked the car, and as soon as I got within about 30 meters of where GZ was, I knew I had a problem. Now, when you triangulate, you usually figure out that, you give or take, you're probably going to have about plus or minus 50 meters in which to search, because you can never be 100% accurate. Well, you think you can, but you know there's always a few errors that creep in. Now, 50 meters circular diameter is not too hard an area to look in. But now imagine superimposing that circle on a cliff. Well, not quite a cliff, but a very sharp drop. And that's what I had to face. Now, of course, I looked around at first and I thought, well, I'll go find this second geocache and see if I can find that. And I did that, and I came back to the original location where I was looking for this two-ways cache, and I thought, well, let's give it a go. So I used the concentric looping circle approach, where you start at where you think GZ is, and then you start looking in every crevice. Now, this geocache wasn't hidden in what I would call haystacking, although it was fairly close, because there were lots and lots of places where it could have been hidden. Now, after about an hour of searching on this fairly steep hill, in which in some parts it was very easy to slide and almost slide all the way down to the lake below, I was just about to give up. And the usual story, you decide to give up, you turn around, and what do you see? There's the geocache. Now, the geocache, it turns out, was in a fairly obvious spot and not all that far away from where I originally started searching. The next thing was to try and get the geocache because it wasn't easy to get to. It was located in an area where I had to do a bit of climbing. Once again, had to be careful I wasn't going to slip. So it took me two goes to get it because I wasn't going to let this one go after all that searching. And I finally had the geocache in my hand. I sat down on a rock ledge. I put the geocache next to me, took the gloves off to open it up, and you wouldn't know what happened. The cache slipped. And those who know this area will know exactly what happened. The cache then slid down the hill and tumble, tumble, tumble. Went about 10 meters down the hill and it stopped at the base of a tree. I got up thinking, good, there's no damage. It's not gone too far. As soon as I stood up, it moved again. Tumble, tumble, tumble. And it kept going. And in some spots, it was actually bouncing about 5 feet into the air, or about 2 meters into the air. Now, this was one of those Sistema plastic containers, and I just kept watching it thinking, don't break, don't break. Eventually, the thing went so far away that it disappeared from my view, and at that moment, I heard this huge cracking sound, which is the sound of Sistema plastic breaking open. Well, there's only one thing to do, have to go get the cache. So I slid down the hill, because that was the only way to get down there. Got to where the cache was, and of course one end of it was broken open and there were bits of the cache contents which happened to be full. Well, now it wasn't, because there were bits everywhere, and that took me a few minutes in which to gather everything up. At that point, I then realized I actually left my bag back up the hill, so then I had to climb back up the hill. To cut this story short, basically the cache is sitting in my study at the moment, ready for a new container, and yes, I'm going to have to go up that hill to replace it. So I'm sorry to the cache owner, I've already let them know, but look, if you've got an embarrassing story like that to tell, why not give us a call on the GeoTalk hotline on 850-GEO, because I'm not the only one who's going to make a goose of myself. Time for a trivia question, and then let's do the profile. It's fairly simple. Which Australian geocacher has found the most number of caches in 2007 so far, and how many have they found? That answer at the end of the podcast. Well, joining us from the caching capital of Australia, Adelaide, it's Gail from the Wackies. Thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Now, first of all, let's start off. When did you start geocaching?
Would have been August last year, 2006. Mm-hmm. So I think it's about 10 months ago.
And who introduced you to the sport or hobby?
Well, I actually pretty much found it on my own. I was thinking of getting a GPS because I have a tendency to just go that way and not necessarily know where I'm going, just decide it looks like a good way to go. Thought maybe one day I'd need a GPS to find my way back. So I started looking around the forums, and somebody on the forums, but I'm not actually sure who it was, recommended I have a look at the site, and yeah, took it from there. It didn't take long to get hooked.
So that was on the GPS forums?
GPS Australia, I think it might have been, but I'm not certain.
Okay. Now, you say you like going out. Is that driving or hiking?
Driving mainly, yeah. Okay. Had young kids for a while there, so it's always been more towards the getting out and going for a drive and doing a bit of a hike while you're out there, but not so much of the long hikes.
Yeah. How did you come up with the name?
Well, my surname's actually Mackie, so I've always been Wacky Mackie. And unfortunately, it actually suits, so it's always stuck.
And how many people form the team, the Wackies?
There's myself and two kids, a 15-year-old boy and a 8-year-old boy, commonly known as the Brat Boys.
And do they obviously enjoy geocaching?
Absolutely, yeah. The youngest one's so hooked, he actually tries to miss days of school so he can go out geocaching. I've only got to mention that a new cache has come online and they want to be out the door.
Yeah. What do you like about geocaching?
I like the fact that you get actually out to places that you may never have ever realised were there. You know, places that only the locals know. You find out about stories or a bit of history, local legends, all that sort of stuff that people put in the cache notes that you would never have found out just by being a tourist in the area.
Have you got some examples of those?
On the Eyre Peninsula, there's a group of caches that are all basically local legends about mysteries that happened back in the, 1800s or something like that. And they're all actually very interesting stories. And there's, I think there's three of them, all very different stories, but all similar in the essence. They're like local legends from the area. And some of the old buildings that relate to the legends are still there. The lakes that relate to them are still there, you know, and stuff like that. So you actually get a sense of what things might have been like back in the old days, I guess.
Mm. Any memorable geocaching adventures, one that stands out?
Our very first weekend that we went out caching, we actually tried a cache, didn't get it, unfortunately, but that was because we didn't have a torch. One called Astro La Vista Baby, and you actually need to, it's a multi, so you find one cache and that gives you the tools that you need to find another cache. And you actually, it's treated like it's an asteroid and you're delving into the depths of this asteroid by going through this big tunnel, and it's actually very interesting. And a bit exciting, especially when it's your first weekend out, not really knowing what to expect, and you come across something like this, where, you know, you've got to solve this multi as well as have this challenge to do. So that one was pretty good.
So do you prefer finding the caches that are out in the bush, that are a bit of a walk, or do you prefer the urban ones, or is it a bit of a mix?
Definitely prefer the country ones. I'm not a real city type person. Too many people in the city, but I like the country ones because I like the journey getting there. I like the fact that you need to find your way to wherever it is and you can have a bit of a cruise and whatnot getting there. And then once you're there, you know, it could be a long walk, it could just be a quick one, it could be so a place of interest, it could be anything. So I really like the country ones, just the fact that you're out there and a bit isolated from the big smoke, I guess it is.
And you don't have to be stealth-like all the time.
That's right, yeah.
Although you have a bit of an advantage with a 7-year-old.
Yeah. I actually use my kids a bit, to be honest.
Have you got
an
example?
They're very handy. When somebody's sitting on a park bench that you might want to get to, you send the kids in and tell them to have an argument next to the people and they always move.
Well, that's a handy hint for other caches.
That's right. So, yeah, the kids, you know, sometimes it's, you know, you send the oldest teenager in because he can look like a thug when he wants to, or you can send the youngest one in because he can just be cute and mischievous when he wants to, and, you know, stuff like that. Just depends on what the situation calls for.
How many cache finds are you up to now?
I'm up to 534.
Gee, that's pretty good for 10 months. I mean, is that because you're obsessed, or is Adelaide really, really that intensively populated with caches?
No, to be honest, most of them are holiday caches. So we went to the Eyre Peninsula for a few weeks, did 100 over there. Riverland, you know, for a weekend, we'll do another 30-odd there. And so most of them have been by going out for weekends or short holidays or just day trips with.
When you go out geocaching, particularly for a bit of a walk, what are some of the things you take with you?
Well, we always take the backpack with wet ones, Band-Aids, Panadol. Always got to have the Panadol. I've got two kids. Yeah, the kids always carry water. My youngest one would drink a river if he could. He just drinks that much water. So we're very, very used to carrying heaps of water. And the other essential item is barbecue shapes. You wouldn't believe how many boxes of barbecue shapes we go through.
Well, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun and the kids are enjoying it, which is, I suppose, a bonus. Gail, thanks very much for joining us on GeoTalk.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people. and neither do we.
Hey, Spindock Bob. Just wanted to take the opportunity to call you on the new GeoTalk hotline and leave a gratuitous plug for the upcoming WMD event happening in Campbelltown soon. Unlike George W. and the Alliance's failure previously to find the weapons of mass destruction, I can assure you that we will have weapons of mass destruction at the WMD event. It's in Campbelltown on Sunday the 24th of June. Everyone's welcome, especially families and kids. You can check out all the details on the cash page, which is GC132J8, and we hope to see you all there. Cheers.
Oh, hi. Look, it's Spindock Bob calling, and the reason I'm calling is because Sniffer and the Gurus left a message, but the GeoTalk hotline actually mucked up their message, so I'm calling on their behalf. They've got a cache event that's happening in Tasmania on the 23rd of June at 6 p.m. Now, it's going to be at the New Sydney Hotel, and there's going to be a range of speakers who are going to be there giving presentations. So come on down and listen to Cheesy Pigs, Craig Rat, Vaccine New Mob, Team Swampy, and Snoover, and they're going to give a few presentations and take you through all the ins and outs of GSAC, Aussie Explorer, using a PDA, and all about geocaching Australia. So come down and check it out. Make sure, though, that you leave a posting on their page, which is GC12RK1, and let them know that you're coming. Hope to see you there.
So welcome to part two of Waymarking, where in this episode we're going to look at how you go about creating a waymark so that other people can log it. Now, in this particular example, we're going to look at Australian trig points. Now, what I've done in the last few weeks is I've actually gone and found a trig point out in the middle of nowhere. Well, actually, it's out by the Nepean River near Penrith. And I've taken a photo of the waypoint, and I've also taken a reading of its actual location, just as if I was hiding a cache. And I'm joined by Mix now. He's going to help me go through the steps of creating the waymark. How are you going, Mix?
Good, thanks.
Okay, so what's the first step? I've got the photos, and I've got the actual GPS coordinates of my waymark that I want to add to the Australian trig points set. How do I go about doing it?
Okay, so the first step will be obviously to log into waymarking.com. And then to go and find the category for which you want to list the waymark. So in this case, Australian trig points. So just as we said last week, as we're going through and looking for a waymark to go and find, you go through and go into categories and we'll choose the category for which you want to hide a waymark. So in this case, Australian trig points. Once you get to that, on the right hand of your screen, you'll see there's a bunch of things called category options. And one of those category options is post new waymark. And so by clicking on that link, you then get a page which is a bit similar to, the hide a cache page on geocaching.com, but obviously with some slightly different information. And some of that will be determined by waymarking.com. They're things that apply to all categories. And some of those things will be things that apply specifically to this category. So it's always worth checking that before you go and, you know, get your photo and get your GPS to coordinate to see if it's going to be some specific information that you need to have sort of before you can create the category. Mm. So I guess that's the first step. Give that a go.
Okay. And actually, that's a good thing to point out, that just don't assume that you just need, say, one photo or two photos and a GPS set of coordinates, because another one, for example, that I've contributed to has been airports around the world, and they actually need some quite specific information, such as airport codes and information about the history of the airport. So you may need to do a little bit of research before you do this.
It's always good just to check your category and know what you've got to find before you go looking for it.
Okay, so I've clicked on the post new waymark, and we've got a page here that says enter information. So so we go about filling out these fields, I suppose.
Yeah, so first one there is name, so you give your waymark a name. I guess the tradition with Australian trig points is to name the waymark after the trig, if you know the name of the trig, but there's no convention that says you actually absolutely have to do that, but that's what most people have been doing.
Okay, and the official name of the trig you can usually find from maps that are available, obviously, in camping stores and so forth.
Absolutely. So some trigs, particularly the remote ones that haven't been vandalised, will actually have a little name plaque on them with the trig name. But if it's in town and you can't get that, then usually you can find it on a map.
So in this particular case, I don't know exactly what the name of it is because I don't have a map and there was no actual name written on the trig point. Can I put in a name now and change it later on?
Yes, just like a case, you can go in and edit various fields, and in this case, you can edit the name.
Okay, cool. So, okay, well, in this example, we'll just call it for the moment Nepean River, Penrith, New South Wales. Obviously, then the next step is that I've got to fill in the coordinates and give it a bit of a description. So what sort of things are you looking for in the description in this particular category?
Well, I guess the key things would be give people a bit of information that might encourage them to go and visit it themselves. So if there is a great view, mention it. If there's some other feature that's worth seeing, put that in there. And if it's particularly difficult to get to, some trig points, there might only be one really good access route or one way in that's probably acceptable. The other routes might involve crossing private land, for example. So if that's the case, then you'd fill people in. So that way, you know, people aren't complaining later on that they had to cross some farmer's land to get to the trig point. So access information about why you should visit it or what makes it interesting, help people choose whether or not they want to make the trip.
Okay, so I've put all the information in. Obviously, I haven't got details about the maps and so forth, and I've checked the conditions of use, because as I always do, tick the boxes and press save. Now it's sent me to another section called uploading images. What do I have to do here?
Okay, because it's not a physical cache, most waymarks do come with the image option. And, you know, you've saved your waymark, it's there, but you haven't actually put it up for it to be approved yet. So you've got this moment where the waymark's there and now you've got the opportunity to put your image up because the image is important in this case. Part of Australian trig points as a category is that you have a photo of the trig point. So there's an option there to browse, to find the photo of the trig point, to give it a caption and a description of the image and to load that up to your waymark before it's submitted for approval.
Okay, so, well, I've got two photos. I've got one, which I've been doing in previous ones, is of the GPS at the location, so you kind of get a bit of a close-up of the trig, and one of the view from it. So I've navigated to the file and given it a bit of a description, okay, and click the upload button, give it a few seconds. Okay, so there it is. Excellent. So now I can upload the second image in there, which I'll do. And then press on the continue button. And there's the second picture up on the website. So I've done that. Click the continue button. Now it seems as though I've got one more page left to go. What do I do with this page now?
Okay, this is your chance to look at your waymark as it's going to appear for people who might come and look for it and make sure you're happy with it before going any further. So what you should see on your screen now is what will be on the screen once the waymark is approved. So it's got your description, it's got your photo, and it's got any of that other information you might have added in terms of, or haven't added in terms of, you know, maps and what have you. Then down at the bottom of the page, there's two options now, and one is save and submit later. So if you're not finished working on it, if you're putting it together and you want to come back and tweak it, you want to go and check a coordinate or do something, you can save it and come back to it later, or you can click the submit waymark for review, and basically say, yep, this is ready to go, and it's out there for people to find once it's approved.
Okay, well, I'm pretty happy with it for the moment. I might do some editing later on when I gather some more information, such as map names and so forth. So I'm going to submit waymark. Well, I'm going to click on the waymark for review button, and yep. Voila, I get a successfully submitted it for review. So what happens now?
Well, I've just gone into my email and click to refresh, and sure enough, there's an email there saying to me as a member of the Waymark Australian Trig Point category group, I've received an email, and so will all the other members of the group, saying that there is a Waymark awaiting review called Nepean River, Penrith, New South Wales, and I've got a link, and if I click on that, it'll take me to a page which gives me the option of looking at the Waymark you've created. Quite a nice picture there, I can see. And I can review the information that you've written in, and I could check it against a whole range of things. Obviously, if there was another waymark within a certain distance, I'd get a message, or particularly within this category, I'd get a message there flagging it for me so that that way I wouldn't approve, you know, a trip point that's already been listed, for example. Pretty much the same as a geocaching.com review, probably a little bit simpler. But basically just look at make sure it conforms to our category, that it is a trig point, that it is in Australia, that it has all the basic information that we're looking for. And if I'm happy, then I can just click the accept waymark category button, and which I've just done. And your waymark is now approved and is there for people to find. So if you go into the category, you should see it.
Excellent. Well, look, thanks very much for taking us through those steps, Mick. So I think what we'll do is leave people now to sort of discover the whole waymarking website and see if they can upload a few of their own, particularly the Australian trig points. And then maybe in a few episodes' time, we might get back together again and chat about how to create your own category. Thanks once again for joining us on GeoTalk, Mick, and hopefully you'll see quite a few more waymarks in the next few weeks.
It'd be great to see more up there. Thanks for talking to me.
And so we're nearly at the end of GeoTalk for another episode. Okay, first of all, time for the answer to the trivia question. Which Australian geocacher has found the most number of caches in 2007 so far? Well, if you didn't know the answer, it's Dax Emu Mob. And Dax has actually found, or Dak, I should say, has found 1,035 so far, which is almost equal to the number he found in 2005, which was 1,109, but not quite their record of last year, 1,503. Another thing I should mention about Dak and the Emu Mob is that they recently passed Macamob to be the most prolific cache finder in Australia. Now, Macamob are currently at 4,424 and Dak's Emu Mob at 4,453. And part of that, I think, has to do with the fact that they had a really big cache run on the 28th of February 2007. And if you check out the stats, you'll see that they set an Australian record of 128. Now, they weren't alone, and you're going to hear in some upcoming episodes of GeoTalk who they were caching with when they set that record. And so that brings me to the end of this episode of GeoTalk. In our next episode, we're going to have a Mission Impossible special where we've got audio coming to you from Dubbo from the geocaching event there that long weekend. So I hope over the next couple of weeks the weather isn't too cold or too wet for you and that you get plenty of geocaching done. And until next time, safe geocaching.